Into the stadium they come. Couple of hundred metres to go. It's anybody's. It doesn't look like Fella can do it for the Norwegians. It's Sweden and the United States. Stride for stride. Push for push. Who's it going to be? Nilsson or Diggins? Coming down to the line. And the United States has done it! From Sweden and Norway. Oh, what a performance from Jess Diggins.
Oh, man. Makes
history for the United States.
Makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up listening to that. I remember watching it on television. And the gold medal winner, Jessie Diggins, is with us now by phone. She's a two-time Olympian, four-time world championship medalist, the most decorated U.S. cross-country athlete in world championship history. And in 2018... Jessie and her teammate became the first Olympic gold medalists in U.S. cross-country history. And as you listen to her talk, do you remember that? As you're listening, Jessie and Keegan, ski in 2018, what were your thoughts? What questions do you have about becoming a top athlete? We'd love to hear from you. She has a new book out. It's called Brave Enough, and it's her life story. Jessie Diggins, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
You ever get tired of hearing those that last 30 seconds? You probably heard it many, many times in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I have, but it's always going to be this really amazing, positive memory, and yeah, it brings back all the good feelings.
Well, I hope it does. And it's so cool that you know you're a Midwestern, you're a Minnesotan right next door to Wisconsin, and we've had a lot of great sports heroes, I think, from the Midwest, especially when it came to winter sports. And you are certainly one of them. Not you were. 24 when you won?
Yeah, I was 26 years old.
26 years old. And so you're 28 now.
Mm-hmm.
So Jill was asked me, Jill Nadeau, my producer, said, I wonder why was it important for you to tell your story now?
Yeah, well, to be honest, the idea of writing a memoir had actually never occurred to me, if I'm being totally transparent. I kind of thought, oh, you know, who would want to read my story? I don't know if I have anything interesting to tell. Even after the Olympics, I still thought that. But a few months later, I came out with my full story about how I had struggled through an eating disorder and sought help and sought treatment and gotten better. And the response from parents, coaches, teammates who said, wow, that sounds like my story. I needed to read that. This gave me hope. This gave me some understanding and compassion. I was like, huh, you know, maybe by sharing our full stories, not just the shiny gold medal moments, although those are certainly very fun, but the ups and the downs and the hurdles and the bumps in the road, maybe that can help people realize that, you know, the people that maybe they've seen on TV or maybe they look up to for sporting moments, nothing went exactly perfectly for them. And, you know, that you don't have to have this perfect linear path in order to be successful. Because I've found the more we humanize our heroes, the more reachable and accessible they become to everyone. So kind of started thinking like, you know, maybe the time is right to tell this. And, you know, truth be told, every time I hang out with my teammates from the World Cup, we start telling stories about all the crazy travel incidents or race stories that we've accumulated from nearly a decade of racing on the World Cup. And you realize that there are some really fun stories in there that you do want to share and write down so that you can remember them all one day. So I was so fortunate to combine with Todd Smith, who helped me tell my story, and yeah, we decided the time was right.
Well, I tell you, and that portion, I want to get to that portion of the book, but not right yet. But I it's really a powerful, very powerful section of your book. I had close person who went through an eating disorder, and so I had some insight into it as it was happening, and so you capture it's unvarnished, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that was
a very powerful part of the book.
Yeah, it was very important to me that this isn't this glossy, shiny, look, Ma, I did it. I won the Olympics. Like, yes, there is that one chapter, but it was so important to me to really tell the, you know, unfiltered, raw truth of what it takes to get to the Olympic level, both in training and in struggles, both personal and professional. And so it was important to me to really let the readers have the most intimate inside look into my brain and my life and what that's like.
Well, let's go back. I'm really glad you, you sit down and read this book and you really have, I think you get a pretty good insight into what it's like or what it takes kind of to become somebody who can compete at that kind of world championship and Olympic level. And you had, I think, by anyone's standards, you had a pretty idyllic childhood.
Oh, yeah. I was extremely fortunate. outside all the time.
Yeah. So talk about what you were like. Your mom and Dave had your mom was from a Canadian and your dad a U.S. citizen.
Well, actually, they were both born in Canada, but my dad still has a green card, and my mom got her U.S. citizenship, and they met at Gustavus Adolphus College right here in Minnesota, and settled down in Afton, Minnesota. And, you know, they both love being outside. They really have this really wonderful appreciation for nature and the outdoors and experiencing all four seasons and making sure to enjoy them all. And so from a really young age, I got to share that passion and that love. And so they'd put me in their backpack and go off skiing every weekend at a different park system all over the Midwest. And so then it was only natural that I learned the sport as well, but I was extremely energetic. And so they realized early on, like, we're going to have to find a way to keep this kid entertained because she's got a lot of energy. So they enrolled us in the Minnesota Youth Ski League as a family. And actually, fun fact for you, I learned how to ski in Wisconsin at the Will River State Park. It's right on the border.
Yeah.
Pretty close to Afton, Minnesota. So it's just a fantastic park. They have an amazing club program there. And it was just so great to get to make friends and learn how to ski. And we were playing tag on skis and playing soccer on skis. And so it was a fun way to be introduced to the sport, not from a racing perspective, but it was all about the joy of the sport itself and making friends and being outside and, ooh, let's go ski this new trail and can we make it 10 kilometers in a single day kind of thing. And that was, I will forever be grateful for that because it just nurtured my passion for this sport. And I think it's one of the reasons I, you know, haven't struggled with burnout at all, because it was never about winning. It was just about loving what you're doing.
Yeah. And there you were. I think you were essentially joined the Minnesota Ski League when you were, what, three?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really cool program because, you know, you can teach kids to ski from a young age. And then oftentimes the parents are learning how to ski at the same time. Or, you know, the kids are in their ski class and the parents get to go ski like on a little ski date by themselves. So it's honestly a really incredible program.
And you were pretty kind of competitive there. They had something called Medals for Miles. Was that part of that program?
Oh, yeah. So this was really fun. It was a kind of a fun challenge for the kids where you'd keep track of how many kilometers you skied. So maybe you skied a 5-kilometer trail and you got to say, oh, yeah, we made it 5K. That's so great. And you'd high five each other. And there'd be this big board where you can write down how many kilometers you skied. And at the end of the whole winter, you'd add up all the kilometers and you got what was called Medals for Miles, but really it was Pins for Kilometers. But it just that didn't sound as catchy, so we called it Medals for Miles. But you got a little pin for how many kilometers you had skied. And, yeah, I got really competitive with it. You know, if I needed to make it to 50K, I'd be like skiing laps around the warming hut the day before just to get that final kilometer in.
I love that. I love that story as I was reading it in your book. Oh, my goodness. Jesse Diggins, our guest today. She'll be with us until about 12:30 today. We're talking about her book. It's called Brave Enough. And it's the story, kind of her life story, and including her Olympic gold medal victories. But also, as important, I think, the struggles that she went through with an eating disorder, as you know, in part of her life. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with Jesse Diggins, and you can join in. Stay with us. Back after the news. Talking with Olympic gold medalist Jesse Diggins on the program now. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us today. She has a really great book out. It's called Brave Enough. It's her story and a story of her life, essentially leading right up to and through winning the Olympic gold medal in cross-country skiing in 2018. So it's great to have her with us today. Certainly, if you have questions for her, I hope you will join in. What's it like to participate in the Olympics? Do you have a child who hopes to compete on a national level? What concerns do you have? Join in. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Jesse, you were a good skier, but you were involved in a lot of other sports and activities as a youngster, too. What do you think that, what effect did this have on you as an athlete?
Yeah, I was so grateful to have the opportunity to compete in a lot of different sports. And by compete, I mostly mean just like run around and get in the way and have fun. But I loved track and field. I used to do all the really fun field events. Like I tried discus, pole vault, triple jump, long jump, hurdles. Like I was into all of it. I loved swimming. I even tried a year on the diving team when they were short of girls. I was really bad at it, but I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I played soccer. I took ice skating lessons for 1 year and then focused my efforts on running the spotlight for my little sister's shows. As she did ice skating routines. But, you know, I was so fortunate to have those experiences because, oh, and I danced a lot, too. I loved dancing. Oh, my goodness. And it kept me well-rounded. It made it so that I didn't specialize too early in one thing. And I think that really helped me stay away from burning out on the sport that I love so much because I also had love for other sports as well. And those different movement patterns and different skills you learn playing team sports, doing individual sports, you know, like the coordination required to learn how to pole vault is really helpful because it teaches you to be coachable and to take direction and to learn how to move in different ways. And that did translate into better performance on skis. So I think, yeah, it was a really, really cool experience, and I'm really glad that I got to do all those other sports.
Just as an aside, I wonder sometimes as I look, I've got a daughter in high school right now, and I look at team sports, and I look at the specialization that goes on for a lot of kids these days. Like, there are kids who will only play soccer, and they play at 12 months of the year or only whatever sport it is. I don't want to pick on soccer necessarily. But there is really some advantage to broadening your sports interest areas.
Yeah, I do believe that. And I mean, I'm not an expert, right? And I'm also not a parent, but I think that having the opportunity to cast a really wide net and find out where my passions were and to really make those friendships and connections and learn about sportsmanship and teamwork in many different sport areas. That was so beneficial to me, and I can't say enough times how grateful I am that I did not specialize too early, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're 12 years old, you're just running around, having fun with your friends, growing passion for sport, growing passion for being outside, growing passion for being part of something bigger than yourself. It doesn't really matter what sport you're playing. Like, if you want to become a professional, you will develop those skills eventually, but you know, you're not going to get a leg up when you're 12 years old by specializing. You're going to maybe risk burning out later on. But you're just building a general base for your sporting life and your fitness by doing a lot of different sports. It doesn't really matter what the sport is.
Yeah. But here you were, weren't you in seventh grade when you first made the varsity team? Ski team?
Yeah, and it was actually sort of by mistake because one of the girls who was going to compete in a conference meet got sick the morning of, which was really unfortunate for her. And so our head coach of our women's team, Chris Hansen, she came and found me. And I was like in the middle of like a large Snickers bar because I was going to race in like 2 hours because, you know, the junior varsity was racing after the varsity team. And she's like, hey, there's, you know, last minute, there's a spot open. Do you want to race? And I was like, yeah, you know, like through a mouthful of Snickers. And she's like, okay, you're on in 10 minutes. And I was like, what? All right. And like, I think this is really just a testament to like young kids. You can just throw them in anything. Like if I had to race on a 10 minute notice today, I would just probably keel over and die on the side of the trail without having a proper warm up. But like as a seventh grader, you just jump in and you do it and you're stoked. And so for me, that was really, really cool. And that was sort of my big break. As it were, you know, getting a chance to get my feet wet.
And you get a lot of support from your teammates, too, which was, you don't often see that where you've got kids that are older associating with kids younger. And there is kind of a big difference between a seventh grader and an 11th grader, for example.
Oh, yeah. You know, I cannot speak highly enough of the Stillwater High School team and really the entire cross country team culture all over the Midwest. You know, I feel like there's that real sense of mentorship, of camaraderie, of true sportsmanship. And a lot of the teams, I think, operate the way ours did, where it was 7th through 12th grade all lumped together. And so the younger kids got to follow the old kids around and learn from them. And it was the biggest benefit of my life, being able to follow around these older men and women, and they really took me under their wing and made me feel like really taken care of. And I was part of their group, and I was like their little sister, you know, and there have been sports that I've been part of where if you're younger and you haven't sort of, you know, paid your dues, you're not really part of the clique. You're not part of the club. Yeah. And I think one of the biggest strengths of our high school team was that there was no clique. It was everybody's in this together. And it was really, the focus was about team first and foremost, before results, before individual performance. It was, you know, are you a good teammate? And I feel like that's a really good foundation for just life in general. But yeah, in sport, it turned out to be the most beneficial thing ever, because of course, a strong team foundation yields positive results. Because we didn't focus on the results. We just focused on supporting one another and helping one another to become the best that we could be. And I felt just, yeah, completely supported in all things by my teammates. And that was just one of the most incredible time periods in my life, just because of that camaraderie.
You were a busy, busy gal. And I know a senior year in high school, and my daughter is a junior now, and she's stressed enough as a junior. It'll get more stressful for her. But she runs cross country and plays soccer and so forth. So she's busy too, but I don't think as busy as you were, with all of the competitions and so forth that you had. And this is, This is when you had some things happen to you that you probably wished never would have happened.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I definitely bit off more than I could chew. I was taking a ton of AP classes, which is always a great idea. You know, it's good to challenge yourself, but I was doing that on top of a really full training schedule. At that point, I was racing with cross-country skiing. I was racing internationally. I missed 60 days of school because I was competing so much, which brought me so much joy. You know, I absolutely loved it. I loved going over to Europe to represent the United States of America at the world junior level. Like, that was one of the biggest hopes and dreams. So I was happy to do it, but I was also playing violin in orchestra and just so involved with so many different things that I was incredibly stressed out, as many high school students are. You know, like you mentioned, like, it is a really stressful time. You're trying to apply to college. You're making some big life decisions about where you want to go and what you want to do. And it is difficult and it is really scary and it is a stressful period of life. And for me, I've always been incredibly type A, just a really like all or nothing type of personality. And so I felt like I had to do everything I did absolutely perfectly, 100% all in all these areas of my life. And I was just unwilling to step back a little bit in any one of these areas. And so as a result, I just got more and more stressed out and I started to use disordered eating as a coping mechanism for stress. And started out just as disordered eating, like labeling foods, good athlete foods and bad athlete foods, and really starting to create rigid ideas in my mind about what I could do and what I couldn't do. And that really spiraled slowly at first, but then faster and faster into a full-on eating disorder until eventually, and this all happened the second half of my senior year. And so it was a coping mechanism for stress, but also internal pressure from myself to be, you know, quote, the perfect athlete, or what I thought was the perfect athlete, which was a pretty misguided notion. I now know, but I thought I had to have, you know, 0% body fat, which is healthy for nobody. But anyway, that happened and I ended up with bulimia shortly after graduating high school. And at this point, my parents, you know, they figured out something was wrong. I was very good at hiding it, but they know me very well. We have a really close connection as a family, and they sort of staged an intervention and said, look, like, we really care about you, and we want you to be healthy. This comes before sport. This comes before school. This comes before anything, your health. And so we ended up going to the EMILY program, which is a treatment center, and it's nationwide, but they have a branch right in the Twin Cities. So I was able to live at home and go to treatment every day, and it helped me get my life back. And this is, you know, I write about it in the book because I want, first and foremost, people to have a little more understanding and to destigmatize eating disorders, because they are a mental illness and it's not your fault. It's not just, oh, that person wants to be thin. They're like not taking care of themselves. You know, I think that's a really damaging stigma around eating disorders. And so I want people to understand a little more so they can have compassion and be able to be there for people in their life who have one. Because statistically, you know, we all know somebody who either has an eating disorder or who will have one or has had one in the past. And so it's really good to understand more about all sort of, you know, mental health and well-being, because there are sort of those invisible things that you can't see that people suffer from. And just because it's not outwardly visible, like a broken leg or a cut on your arm, it doesn't mean you don't need professional help and that you don't need support in healing from it. So it's a part of the book, and it's just a few chapters. It's by no means the entire story. Just as my eating disorder is not my entire story. You know, it's something that happened to me. It's something that I went through and that I, you know, struggled through, but overcame, and I'm stronger now as a result of that. But it's important for me to say that, you know, it is something that happened to me, but it doesn't define me. It's not my entire story. And so if someone reading the book is going through a really tough time, whether that is, eating disorder or any sort of mental health issue, I want them to know that it doesn't have to be their entire story either, even though in the moment it really feels like it is.
Yeah. I was, before you came on, I was talking with our sports reporter, Megan Hart, about a Wisconsin athlete who's made the Olympics, the coming Olympics in the marathon, as a marathoner, and she has battled with an eating disorder as well. It got me thinking, I wonder if there's something in the makeup of some athletes who are driven, if it leads to this kind of disorder. Have you seen it in other athletes that you work have been acquainted with?
Oh yeah, it's very common, especially in endurance sport, but in a lot of athletics, simply because those personality traits are often present. That sort of perfectionism, that absolute drive, that single-minded focus. You know, those are really good traits that can make you an incredibly successful athlete. They can help you be successful in your professional life, outside of sports. However, those are also traits that an eating disorder can thrive on because, you know, you have that absolute, you know, perfectionistic drive, that feeling like, oh, I might never be good enough, so I have to do this 100%. That single-minded focus, you know. But I will say, while those traits can, you know, help an eating disorder develop, those are also traits that can help you get out of an eating disorder as well. Once you decide, nope, I don't need this eating disorder, I am better off without it, I want to get help, then that drive, that focus, that can help you as you stay on your path to recovery. So it's not, you know, it's not just you're doomed if you have, you know, a type A personality. That's not the case at all. And I think, in fact, those traits, once turned around in a positive direction, can really, really help you.
Well, I think you're right. It's just amazing to me that you were able to compete while you were fighting all of this, for sure.
Yeah, and I definitely, you know, I took a lot of steps back in my training and my skiing because it was important to first get my health back. You know, first I had to fight for my life, and then I had to fight for sport. But it was really important that, you know, mental health had to come first. And even though I didn't feel that way at the time, you know, I wanted to race, but it was really important to recognize that you cannot compete well with an eating disorder. There's no longevity, there's no long-term success there. So it was really important for me to be able to be healthy first. And as soon as I, you know, got my health back, boom, you know, my career in sports started to take off. And so it was very cool to see that, you know, that pretty much instant positive reinforcement of, oh wow, like when you take care of yourself, you set the groundwork for a long-term successful career.
Yeah, and you've had a wonderful career, and you world championships. You had great teammates, and a great teammate for the Olympics.
Yeah, you know, it was so fun to go through two different Olympic cycles with many of the same men and women and some new faces as well. And, you know, we've always embraced the strength of the team. And I think that's been a really, really cool part of the USC team, is that, you know, we've really been there for each other and recognize that our successes are a direct result of each other and that teamwork. You know, this is going all the way back to, you know, my high school days, that recognition of, okay, I push you, you push me, we both get better. And if one of us has an amazing race, we know it was because we helped each other get there. And so I think that we really are able to celebrate one another's successes and push each other forward and feel supported in doing so. And so heading into the Olympics, I felt like we had just a very solid team environment, and that was absolutely crucial, because while the Olympics are incredibly fun and exciting and epic, they're also really stressful. You know, like, it's one of the most stressful times in your life. If you know, you feel like the entire world is watching you, waiting for you to write history. there's a lot of expectation and pressure there.
Yeah, you do say in your book it's the best and also the worst time of your whole life, the Olympics.
Yeah, I'm pretty open about that in the book. Yeah, for sure.
Well, that whole race, the Sochi, your experiences there was some really funny. Laughed a little bit about some of your experiences there and what you learned, but then when you got to South Korea, that race that you won with your partner, it's really, even though we know the outcome, it's exciting reading.
Thank you. Well, that was the part where I was like, man, I don't know. Like, people really want to read this. My co-author Todd was like, are you kidding me? Like, don't be silly. Like, yes, people are going to want to know the exact thought process that you were going through in that race, the real time decision making, why you made the moves you did, when you made them. Like, because it's all more strategic and tactic based than people realize. And so he was like, "Yeah, are you kidding me? Like, we have to, you know, give this the chapter that it deserves." So that was really, really fun getting to relive that. And hopefully readers will enjoy getting taken through, like, quite literally every twist and turn on the course.
Yeah, it was, and just learning about the support people that you during the race, the things that go on for me were enlightening as somebody who doesn't race. I like to cross country
ski. Oh my
ski,
God,
but
yeah. There's some serious magic going on behind the scenes. So it's really fun to get to tell people, like, yeah, you know, when we clip into our skis at the start line, there is, you know, hundreds of hours of sweat poured into making those skis in particular as fast as they could possibly be. And obviously our service team absolutely crushed it. They nailed the skis for those Olympics, but we couldn't do that with that. So it's fun to get to show, like, here's all the things happening that you won't see on camera at the Olympics that really influenced the outcome.
I really enjoyed reading that chapter. I actually enjoyed reading all the chapters. I had a lot of fun reading it, Jesse. And I thanks so much for writing it, and thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Jesse Diggins, and her book is called Brave Enough. It's a great story about her life and her role as an Olympian and a gold medal Olympian. And maybe we'll see her in 2022. Who knows? We didn't have time to ask her that, but I wouldn't be surprised. And thank you so much for listening as well. Tomorrow, Darren Bush comes by to talk about this year's Canucopia. And we'll take a look at tick-borne diseases in Lyme as well. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.